I knew nothing about nothing but segregation, having lived in the South from birth. And so it wasn't, now looking back, it was bad. But at that time, it didn't seem so bad. I mean, everything was white and black. White was in one part of the restaurant and black in another part. If you were in there at all, you were in another part. And in many restaurants, they did not have facilities for black. If it was a bus station or someplace that should be called public facility, you would most likely have a separate place that you ate. And, of course, where you waited for the bus. And some smaller parts of the era, such as Punta Gorda, the whites waited inside and the blacks waited on the outside. It was, I guess it was about 1960 when we really started to, I guess, having Martin Luther King tell us there's a better way. And then, of course, it wasn't such a nice place then because it was brought to our attention that the playing field was not level. And, of course, I then joined this civil rights struggle. And I had been a member of the NAACP even back in Miami, but we were more, since Miami was never as segregated as Fort Myers, it had its section of town, and it was much larger, you really didn't notice it. And if you were part of a particular group, it didn't affect you anyway. I had not encountered such a hostile feeling in Miami as here just because of the color of my skin. We were treated as second-class citizens. We were getting an inferior education. We were not looked upon as full participants in many of, such as purchasing a home. I can remember for the first automobile I even came from Miami. I had been accustomed to going on 36th Street or wherever, and I walked up to an automobile dealer, and I was treated like anybody else if I had the money. Went into an automobile dealer that was located where the Justice Center is located now. It was a Renault dealer. Sold a little, they just started selling the Renault. And I went in there to buy a car. And the man asked me, why are you going to pay for it? And of course, I said, with money. You know, is there any other way? He said, don't get smart with me and you won't get a car here. I said, well, I didn't think I was going was being smart. I didn't know any other way that I would pay for it. He says, well, using, and he kept using the N-word. He says, when in buy cars here, they have to have somebody to sign with them. I says, what do you mean sign, sir? I'm going to pay you cash. And he says, no N got enough money to pay for a car cash, pay for one of these cars cash. And if you got it, you must have stole it. And he says, if you show me that much money, I'm going to call the police. So by this time, I know I need to walk out of there. He wasn't the owner of the place. The place was owned, and I don't know if you remember a man by the name of Bud Roth. Bud Roth used to head the parade here, head the Edison Parade every year for years and years. Bud Roth was a nice man, and he heard this man who was his manager talking to me that way and as I walked out. But in those days, if a white person wasn't for it, they was afraid to show their hand because they would be, you know, they would be treated differently by the other. So he followed me until he said that. So that guy works for me. He says, and I think he used the word redneck. And he's just a redneck. Don't pay him any attention. He says, and this was on a Friday. He says, he won't be at work tomorrow. Come back tomorrow and I'll sell you a car. He said, but I don't want to have no problem with him. And I kept thinking, this is the man who owned the place. Why would he have a problem with somebody who worked for him? But that's the way it was in those days. I mean, if you were white and you was a racist, anybody that wasn't a racist would be treated the same as a black person if they disagreed openly. They may disagree, but they had to kind of be quiet about it. I had a lot of white friends who say, I don't agree with it, but you know, I don't want to get in trouble with my, in some case, my father.